Okay, thanks.
The stage is yours.
Welcome to this session. Hi, everybody. In this session, I really want to talk about machine learning and Kafka and connect the dots a little bit more so that you can understand how many different projects are used combining these different technologies and what the added value is. So my name is Kai from Confluent, and I work a lot around Kafka and different projects at customers. And that's also the goal of my talks at ApacheCon. So this morning I had one about more focus on IoT integration. And this one is now getting the data from the IoT devices and using it with machine learning to get business value out of that. And then on Thursday, I have two other talks about other topics. So this talk here is more about a fictional story. So I want to show you a story. It's very similar to what we do at our customers. But even if it's fictional, it's more or less the real world. And based on that, I will go step by step through the steps to connect Kafka and machine learning and how to do that the right way. So this story is about a global automotive company which builds a connected car infrastructure, so similar to what I explained in the morning about the MQTT integration. But here it's now really about more a complete digital transformation and improving the customer experience and increasing revenue with that from the company perspective. So therefore, the idea is not here to build the connected car infrastructure. This is already set up, as I explained this morning, how to do that with MQTT proxy and Kafka Connect and so on. So the current status is here really that the thousands of cars are already connected and send real-time data to a Kafka cluster. And with that now, we want to leverage the data via machine learning to add value to that. That's the main goal of to talk about in this talk. How can you leverage machine learning with Kafka to add value? So the first point here is really important. I want to talk about how to analyze and act on critical business moments. And if you think about machine learning, in many talks you hear many fancy things like image recognition or speech translation or even self-driving cars. And that's all cool and that's all working, and for some use case it's important. But machine learning is also about the traditional use cases, and that's even more important because there are so many of them in every business today, and you can improve them with machine learning. Here you see just a few examples, like where you do it really in real time, like fraud detection for payments, for example, or real-time tracking of your car where it is on the street right now. On the other side, it's also about use cases where it's more about minutes, like transportation rerouting. If you have logistics and truck real-time tracking and you want to send them to the end of the route in the best case without a traffic jam and so on. And there is also long-term opportunities like predictive maintenance, where it's typically not about seconds, but more about monitoring the data for different minutes or hours or even days, and then correlate the data and make the right decisions. Now, that's the main idea behind the use cases. And with that, I want to define what I mean with machine learning on one slide, because there's many people talking differently about that. And I mean with machine learning to allow computers to find hidden insights without being explicitly programmed where to look. So that really means, so if you're a Java developer, in the past you wrote if, else, and for loops to implement your business logic. With machine learning, you send all the data into one of these models or in algorithms which are trained with the machine learning framework so that you get the insights out of that. So machine learning includes many different algorithms that can be decision trees or clustering, and then also the new fancy stuff, deep learning, which is typically neural networks, like a convolutional neural network to do image recognition, or for example, an autoencoder to detect anomalies. That's the example I will use today. So just to have the same definition, machine learning, overall it's many different algorithms, and there is not the best one. It depends on the use case, what you want to do, and in many projects you often compare different of these algorithms to choose the best one with the best results. So if we want to use machine learning, as discussed before, the point really is, on the one side, there is the data scientist, which builds analytic models. If you go to a website like TensorFlow or any other machine learning framework, you typically have a Hello World example where you write 20 to 50 lines of Python code and you have a great model, which can do image recognition of specific pictures or which can do speech translation with just a few lines of code. However, the point is deploying that to production at scale. And if you think about use cases like the connected car infrastructure I'm talking about, where you connect millions of cars and have to process the data in real time, then this is really hard to do. It's not just writing a few lines of Python code and that's running then for millions of cars and correlating the data. And the next picture really clarifies this even more. This is a paper which was published a few years ago from Google about the hidden technical depths in machine learning systems. And here you see, really, if you want to have machine learning at scale in production, it's a lot of different things which you have to consider. And probably if you're in the back, you can't even read it, but this small thing in the middle, that's ML code. So that's the thing which you write as data scientist in Python code or any other language and to train the model with that. So this is really just a small, small part of the whole efforts to bring machine learning to production at scale. It starts with data collection. If you have to collect data from millions of cars, then probably Python is not really working well with that. It's not built for that. And also then, if you have to do things like deploying the model, serving infrastructure, again, in real time for millions of cars, it's probably not the 20 lines of Python code which will do that very well in a reliable and successful way in real time. And also we have to handle monitoring of all that infrastructure. So this is really much, much more than just writing a few lines of Python code and deploying a TensorFlow model. And therefore, let's think about how can you do that. And there's a few examples available. Here is, for example, Netflix. And I just use a few of the public references here where the people also describe in detail how they implemented that. And Netflix has built a recommendation engine for their streaming service so that every user gets specific content which is for this user. And under the hood, the backend uses machine learning to recommend the right movies and so on for the users. Uber on the side has built a machine learning platform, Michelangelo, which supports many different technologies and machine learning frameworks under the hood. But it's a whole framework to solving these hidden depths in machine learning I just showed you on the last slide. Or another example is PayPal. They have built a machine learning infrastructure for fraud detection. And even for this specific single use case, there's plenty of different models and processing units and things you have to do and consider and improve all the time. So it's as you can just see on this small picture, it's a big infrastructure just for deploying machine learning to production. And the point now is, and the interesting thing, and that's why it's related to this talk here, these are examples where Kafka is used heavily under the hood to build the scalable machine learning infrastructure. And this is what I want to talk about in this session today, how to combine machine learning with Kafka the right way to bring machine learning to production at scale in a reliable way. I will not give a deep introduction to Kafka. I hope most of you know it already. If you don't, it's just on one slide. Kafka is a streaming platform which is a combination of messaging, so publish, subscribe, and storage, so that you also store the data on disk to decouple the producers and consumers, and it allows processing the data. So Kafka is really much more than just sending data from A to B. It's really a streaming platform for high scale in a reliable way in a distributed system. And so it's very different from traditional messaging systems like ActiveMQ or any other JMS implementation, for example. Kafka is used a lot in many different industries. So here's just a few examples from different tech companies like LinkedIn or Netflix. They use Kafka to process over 4.5 trillion messages a day or processing over 6 petabytes of data per day. And this is really just a few examples. The main point I say always when I introduce Kafka is that it's not just used by the tech companies, but in the meantime, by every big company on this planet. And what might be even more interesting for many of you is that Kafka is not just used for big data. That's also very important to understand. While it was built in the beginning for data ingestion into stores like Hadoop and so on or in other data lakes, today Kafka is really used for many mission-critical business applications. And many of these applications are not about big data. These use cases exist, and in a connected car infrastructure, like the data we are using in this example, of course, it's big data. It's terabytes or even petabytes. But we also see many projects where you, for example, build things like instant payment. And instant payment is not about trillions of messages. It's really more about maybe 1,000 messages per second. But they have to be processed in a reliable way, highly available, with zero data loss. And they have to decouple the producers, which might be the mobile app where you send a payment, and all the backends, like the CRM system and like many other systems you have in the backend, both real-time and batch and any other ones. And that's why Kafka is used so much in many different systems, in many different industries today. And here's just a few examples. I don't want to go into detail here. You can take a look at the slides and the links to all these different examples if you're interested later. So, as I said, I don't want to give a deep introduction into Kafka, but more talk about how to combine such a streaming platform with machine learning and how that works together. And the point really here, if you've never done something with machine learning, in the end, it's always two steps. First of all, you ingest all the data into an historical storage, and then you train a model on that with an algorithm, like decision trees or clustering or deep learning. And then you train a model, and after you have built the model, it's a binary. And this binary is then deployed into an application where you use it for predictions on future data. And that's, in the end, the two parts of machine learning. It's model training and model deployment for predictions and inference. And if you see here in this picture, how do you do that with Kafka? I mean, of course, you ingest all the data, either real-time streaming data or maybe data from the databases with change data capture, or you even ingest other historical data from legacy systems. Like, we see more and more people integrating that with mainframes, with SAP systems, and all these kind of things. And then you store it somewhere, and then you train the model on top of that. And afterwards, you deploy your application to a real-time app, which also is often then a Kafka client. Now, this is how you can leverage Kafka in its core for being this streaming platform with messaging and storage to decouple the different systems. However, the Kafka ecosystem is much bigger. So here you see a few additional optional components you can use, like Kafka Connect for integrating with the different sources or things. So if you have to integrate with, for example, MQTT for streaming data, like in this example with connected cars, or with any kind of database or anything else, then Kafka Connect helps you a lot doing that. On the other side, if you want to deploy your model later, you can do that directly into a streaming application. I will talk about that later in the talk, how that works and what's the pros and cons of that approach. So you see here already the first relation of how machine learning and Kafka make sense together. Let's now go a step back to the automotive use case I talked about in the beginning, where we already have our connected car infrastructure and now want to leverage that for machine learning. Yes? Sorry, I can't really hear you. Let's do the questions at the end, I think, because in the big room it's better, and I also can't even see you, right? So in the big room it's better to do that all in the end. I'm sorry. We are now back to the automotive use case with the connected car infrastructure. This is already existing right now because that's not what we want to focus on. We want to use the data from the streaming data from the cars and train models on that to add business value. So the status quo in this example is that we already have connected to the cars via MQTT proxy or Kafka Connect or anything else, and it's already landing in an ingestion Kafka cluster. I say it like ingestion Kafka cluster because this is often the first step in these kind of very big projects. This has to run 24/7 at scale because everything behind that relies on the data in this ingestion Kafka cluster. Like in this example of the automotive company, it's really the main idea is to real-time tracking of the cars and to build new business use cases on that, to sell additional services to the driver, for example. And now the first problem here is actually that this is the ingestion cluster which runs in production for every different project. And on the other side, we have the problem that the analytics team actually is somewhere else. And this is really a use case we see at almost every big company we work with, that there is many different Kafka clusters because this ingestion cluster is used by many different projects, but the analytics cluster or analytics team is working in a completely different infrastructure. In this example, we ingest all the data to AWS, where all the production use cases are running. On the other side, the analytics team, for many different reasons, is running on Google Cloud. And this is really in the real world. We see that in every big company, they are not working on one cloud or just on-prem. They have a hybrid architecture and multi-cloud strategy. So in this case, it's not a big problem because one of the common solutions for this is that you replicate the data in a streaming way from one Kafka cluster to another. This could be either that you have on-premise deployments and replicate everything to an aggregation cluster in the cloud, Or like in this example where the production cluster is running in AWS, and then you replicate the data with a tool like Mirror Maker or with Confluent Replicator to another cluster. And this can be in another cloud, that doesn't matter. It's streamed there in real time, and so you can do all your analytics there. And as this is really then an analytics cluster, it also can have very different SLAs. So when you operate this cluster and think about data loss and so on, you can configure your different clusters in different ways. The one is the production cluster, very critical, and the analytics cluster might be fine if it's down for an hour or two, or maybe it's fine if you lose some data. That depends on how you define and configure and run your cluster afterwards, with all the trade-offs of it. So now we replicate all the data to GCP, and there we can finally do our analytics on the data. For that, however, before we can train a model, we have to do a lot of pre-processing. And if you talk to different data engineers or data scientists, data pre-processing is typically the task which they spend 80% of their time on. Not just on the technical task, but really understanding the business problem and adopting the data and transforming the data to make the data right for training the model afterwards. When you do a Hello World example on TensorFlow website, it's already pre-processed data. It's already in the right shape. That's not the real world. That's then when the data scientists have already done 80% of their tasks. And then the next question is, how do I pre-process the data if I have a large-scale use case, like the connected car infrastructure? As I described in the beginning, probably writing some Python script is not the right thing for that scale. You can try it, and sometimes it might work. However, often for training the model, you don't need all the data from the car sensors. So you want to do things like filtering or aggregations before you even think about training a model with that. And as so many people use Kafka for the ingestion layer, why not also use it for pre-processing? So pre-processing can be done natively with Kafka, for example, with Kafka Streams, which is part of the Apache project, or with KSQL, which is a streaming layer on top of Kafka Streams. The huge benefit of these frameworks is that it's Kafka native, so you don't need another big data cluster for that. The other option would be, and there is always trade-offs, pros and cons, you could also ingest all the data into something like Spark or Flink and do all the processing there, and then maybe send the result back to Kafka or so. That also works, but in this kind of example where you just want to do filtering and aggregations, you should ask yourself, do I really want to do that in a separate big data cluster or simply using the native Kafka features for that? Then you only have to operate one Kafka cluster and do all the processing on top of that cluster. And that's a huge advantage. And also, if you think about that from data science perspective, and that's why I show on the next slide, it's pretty easy to combine the prototyping of the data scientist, where he plays with the data and does some refactoring and some changes and feature extraction. And when he has done the right script and found it, then he can deploy that to production at scale. So here you see also that I mentioned Jupyter Notebooks. So this is one typical tool of the data scientist, and that's totally fine to use. I have examples on my GitHub page also where you can use Jupyter and Python and KSQL to write these kind of queries, first in prototyping and interactive analysis. But then when you have found the right query for you to do the right ETL, then you deploy this query which you see here to production servers. And as KSQL, and similar to Kafka Streams, just uses Kafka under the hood, this has all the benefits of Kafka. High throughput, high reliability, failover. Everything you know from Kafka is also true for this SQL query. You just deploy it to a KSQL server, and it has all the features of Kafka under the hood. And therefore, you can easily solve the impedance mismatch between the data scientist, which wants to use Python and his tools, and the production engineer, which has to be sure that it scales well, that it's reliable and fault tolerant. And this is a great way to combine these two kind of things. So this is one option of how you can pre-process the data with KSQL before you store it somewhere for the model training. So then the next step, after you've done your pre-processing, you do some data ingestion into a data storage. That's where you store all the data from the last day or last week to train your model on, because model training is typically done on historical data. You have to take a look at historical data to get insights out of that, to use them in the future. Here again, if you use Kafka anyway, you could think about why not use Kafka Connect for that, because like Kafka Streams and KSQL, it leverages Kafka under the hood. for high throughput, high availability, and failover. So you can also use any other kind of tool, like an ETL tool or an ESP or so, but then you have another tool you have to maintain in 24/7 mode. I will specifically talk about that on Thursday, where I compare Kafka to ESP and ETL tools and how they compete or complement with each other. So here, let's assume, because it's Kafka native, we use Kafka Connect for that, and store the data in Google Cloud Storage, the object store of Google, so that we can use Google ML Engine and TensorFlow to train our models on top of that. However, and that's also important, and the examples I showed you before from Uber or from PayPal, for example, typically it's very important that you are also flexible to be able to use different data stores and different ML engines and so on. So in this case, this is now the extreme example, but here we could also use Kafka Connect to send it to different data stores, whatever makes sense for you. But typically, it's not just one machine learning framework which solves all of your use cases. Anyway, no matter what you decide, you store your data in a data store. And then finally, after all this work until now, and that's really hard to do at scale for these kind of use cases, then you can train your model. And model training means that you take the data, the historical data stored in a big data store like HDFS or S3 or Google Cloud Storage, and then you put the algorithm on top of that. That's now the 20 lines of Python code we saw in the beginning from the TensorFlow tutorial, right? This is the code which then takes the data and trains it and analyzes it and makes a model out of it to do predictions, to find insights. And that's also where cloud is really huge, because in cloud, you can do elastic scaling. You can start a new cloud instance, you do the model training for an hour or two, and then after it's finished, you can stop it. You just pay for what you use in an elastic scale, and even for extreme scale. That's only possible in the cloud. And also you can leverage, for example, GPUs or TensorFlow processing units on Google, which are specifically built for deep learning. And with that, you can leverage the cloud features and just pay as you go with that, as the scale which you need. So that's the way to train your analytic model. And I want to show you, as this is a Kafka talk, even a more interesting mode to do that. Because typically, you first store all the historical data in an object store or HDFS and then train your model on top of that. In the meantime, there's even a much nicer option. Not a good fit for every use case, but in many options, this is really a nice thing. Today, you can already do model training without using an additional data storage. And the reason for that is that today, there is a TensorFlow plugin, which is called TensorFlow IO, and there is plugins, for example, for Kafka. And with that, you can do streaming from the Kafka source directly into TensorFlow to train the model. So there's no need to use a middle thing like S3 or HDFS to get the data from. And this is really huge, because you can do really native streaming ingestion and then model training on top of that. So here you see a few implementation details of this plugin, and that's really pretty cool. It's not that mature yet. It's, I think, out for half a year or so, but that's a really cool option for the future. And so another point why so many people use Kafka when they think about model training is really that you can replay from the log, because Kafka is a log under the hood and you store the data there in event-based manner. You can consume the data again and again and again. And there's different use cases for this. Either you just change the hyperparameters and train different models with the same technology. Like you see here, we use two different TensorFlow configurations to train models, and then we compare them with A/B testing or so to see which model is the better one to deploy later. Or maybe then we take another tool which uses its own implementation to train a model. In this case here, you see DataRobot, which is an AutoML tool, but it really doesn't matter which technology you use. You can compare different technologies, and they all consume exactly the same data. And that's very important. And with Kafka, where everything is stored event-based in this log, it's very easy to do that, because you can be sure that all the models are trained with the same data, with the same timestamps, and so on. And that's really pretty cool, and a reason why so many people see Kafka for model training and consuming the data in an event-based way. So now we have trained a model, so no matter which technology we have used. We have trained a model. And remember, a model in the end is just a binary. What exactly it is depends on the framework. So in TensorFlow, for example, you typically store a protobuf file, and you have some other config options around that. I often see H2O used in really scalable and performant use cases because it compiles to Java code and therefore to Java binaries, and that's really very performant in a Java application. Some other tools use XML or even proprietary binaries. It doesn't really matter. You have a binary, and that can be used then anywhere. So after we've trained the model, we want to deploy it. And while we have ingested everything into the cloud for elastic scaling and training in the cloud, we now need to deploy our model, and that can be somewhere else. So here we see this is our flow which we have built to train the model. This was in the cloud. But now we have the specific requirement that we cannot deploy the model in the cloud, because for the training, you can anonymize the data and train models on that. But for the predictions in this example, for example, it's not allowed to leave, in this case, Germany, where I'm based, where the car manufacturer wants to deploy the model closer to where it is. And because it's PII data also, with payment data and so on, you cannot simply host it on a US server of the cloud providers. And therefore, that's no problem at all, because you can deploy your binary of the model somewhere else. It doesn't matter. It can be even offline. It can be completely separated from where you trained it before. And I will show a short live demo of that in a few minutes so that you can get a feeling of how that looks like. But that's really the point, that model training and model deployment are two completely different things. From development perspective, from testing, from debugging, from monitoring, that's two completely separated things. And in many cases, it can be combined, but typically it's separated in the most cases I have seen in real-world projects. So let's think a little bit more about model deployment, because there is also two options how you can do that. The first option is that you have your application on the one side, and you have your model somewhere else. So that means you deploy your model to a model server. That's today the most common solution most people do, especially if you come from data science field, where this is simply what the tools provide you. In case of TensorFlow, you have, for example, the TensorFlow model server, TensorFlow serving. This is a model server which you can either use as a cloud service, so Google hosts this for you, or it's also just a Docker container which you can deploy anywhere. Anywhere can also be locally, on-premise, or it can be in a local Kubernetes cluster as a sidecar or something like this. It's in the end just a Java process under the hood. And the point is that your streaming application then always does a request response call to the model. So you send your data from the streaming application, from the Kafka application, to the model server, and there the prediction is calculated by the model, and then the prediction is sent back to the streaming application, and from there to the next consumer of that. This has a few pros. The pros are that a model server automatically has built in things like versioning of the model. So that's pretty good, and also A/B testing and some other things depending on what model server and product you use. However, the key disadvantage of it is that it's not really the streaming way anymore, because if you want to do continuous stream processing, and then you have this request-response communication. For some other proprietary tools, it's HTTP. For TensorFlow serving, you can choose between HTTP and gRPC. So gRPC is already a little bit better, but still, it's always a remote call. So you have to think about questions like, what do I do if the remote server is not available, if the network here is not available? And a few other questions. What do you do in case of failure? How do you continue with your streaming app if there's a failure somewhere? And therefore, it has pros and cons, especially if you think about high performance and large scale. It might be the better to do option number two, where you embed the model into your streaming application. Because then you don't have a remote dependency to anything else and no RPC call somewhere else. And that's really significantly faster and also easier to operate and test and debug, and also easier to handle failure within this application here. The huge trade-off is that you don't get all the features which are built into the model server, right? So there's no statement that this one is always better than the other one. It simply depends on your infrastructure, on your use case, and many other things. For this reason also, I actually have a talk in, I think, in 2 or 3 weeks at Kafka Summit in San Francisco, where I talk specifically 40 minutes just about this topic here. So if you take a look back at my blog or so in 4 weeks, or maybe you attend Kafka Summit, there I will discuss this in much more detail about how you can deploy a model and what are the trade-offs between the different approaches. So, however, anyway, remember either you use a model server and do request response from your application, or you do it embedded into the application itself. And the last piece, and that's also something which you should really not underestimate, is you also have to monitor all that stuff. And that means from a technical perspective, and again, think about connected cars, that's a big infrastructure. And you have to monitor the technical infrastructure if everything is running well, and also the business perspective. So if you deploy models, how is the response time? How is the latency? What's the accuracy of the models? How are the different models working compared to each other? If we have model version 1, model version 2, and compare them in an A/B testing or so. This is also things you also have to implement somehow. And as you have Kafka under the hood anyway, it's a perfect way to use Kafka also for the monitoring infrastructure, because the monitoring has to scale with the infrastructure, and you can combine it very well. And then also, of course, integrate with other monitoring tools like, I don't know, Prometheus or some tracing tools like Jaeger or something like this. So this is, in the end, the story I want to talk a little bit about for model training and for model deployment when you build such an infrastructure. And so now let's also take a look at the use case again. I want to show a quick demo. It's more or less the same demo I showed in the morning if you attended there, but now it's from a different perspective, because the focus is not so much on integration with the MQTT parts, but more about how to deploy my model and how to do the real-time predictions with the model. So here you see on the left side we have the car sensors, which send streaming data. And in this case, I'm using MQTT proxy from Confluent to integrate it to Kafka. You could use Kafka connectors. You could use any other integration like Node.js or whatever you use there. And then we use KSQL to get the data from the sensors and process it. And process in this example means that we use an analytic model to do anomaly detection. And for every single streaming event in real time, we do anomaly detection. And based on that, we then can use Kafka Connect or any other consumer to send the data somewhere else. And that's the beauty of Kafka, that all the producers and consumers are decoupled. In this case, we could have a real-time emergency system which consumes only the critical information and then sends it to the mobile app of the driver. For example, in this case, the anomalies, if it's the engine sensors and you measure the temperature and so on, send an alert in real time to the driver that he has to go to a repair shop in the next 100 kilometers because the engine probably breaks. And in parallel to that, there is also a near real time or batch consumer like Elasticsearch or Spark or so, where you consume not just the critical data, but all the data to do further analytics or reporting or so. And so, in this example, what I want to show you is the KSQL query which I've implemented. So, in this case, I didn't want to show just a filtering or so, which is functions which are out of the box in KSQL, but here I really use a user-defined function. This means I have implemented this function once already before. This is what a developer does. But then, this user-defined function can be used by any end user, even if he doesn't know how it works under the hood. So you see, I use this query to use the TensorFlow model under the hood. You don't have to know that. You just use the query and use the detect anomaly function here. And this is a query I can show you now in a live demo, but the same query could, again, deployed to KSQL service in production. This query, without any other coding, can scale to millions of messages and tens of KSQL servers in parallel, with all the features of Kafka under the hood: failover, high throughput, high reliability, and so on. So let's take a quick look at how that looks like. So here we go. Here I'm now in the local terminal. So this is all Hello World stuff, right? I'm not having a distributed system, but I don't want to have an internet connection that never works in hotels, so I have it just locally on my laptop. And I have already started the required Kafka components like the zookeeper and Kafka and also the KSQL server which I'm using. And so now, what I do, I just go in the end to my GitHub project, which you can also check out later if you want. So here you can really run exactly what I just described with a few commands. It's running out of the box. And I more or less also just doing a part of what's part of this demo. So as first part, I'm creating a new Kafka topic. This is the Kafka topic temperature. And this temperature is in the end the engine from the motor, the engine, the heat, which is measured. And so as next step, the only thing I also have to start is some kind of MQTT integration. In this case, I'm using Confluent MQTT proxy, so I don't even need an MQTT server here. I can directly integrate the MQTT clients, which in this case is the cars, and send the data directly to the Kafka cluster without the need of an MQTT broker in the middle. So this is just one of many architectural options you have. I discussed this in detail this morning in another talk, and that stuff is also available on YouTube and SlideShare already if you need more input for that. So now my infrastructure is running, and now I'm starting KSQL. In this case, I'm using the command line interface. So this is what the data scientist would use for interactive analysis, for prototyping. So here I'm using the terminal, but you could do the same from Jupyter, for example, right, where you can do it even easier for prototyping. And here, for example, I can list my topics. So this is natively integrated with Kafka. So here you see, for example, my temperature topic, which I just created. And now I will create one stream, stream car sensor. And what this stream does, it's really consuming the data from the temperature Kafka topic. In this example, I'm using delimited data, so CSV data. You could do the same, of course, with JSON and AFRO and other data formats. And as this is Hurley world, this is just an event ID, so the sensor ID of the car, and this is the sensor input, which is a specific value. And now after I've created this stream here, I can now do queries on that. So in this example, I'm now saying select event ID, and now here I use the anomaly function, which I discussed before. This is my user-defined function. And here is where the TensorFlow model is running under the hood. So the end user doesn't know that, right? You just use it here. And now, as soon as I send new data to this, it's processed in real time. In this example now, I use the Mosquito client. This means as soon as I click... Oops, this was the wrong one. Let's see. To start it again. So as soon as I click return here, the data from the MQTT client is consumed from the MQTT proxy, which you see at the top, and is forwarding it and pushing it to a Kafka topic. And again, in real time, KSQL is consuming that and processing it. You could do filtering, aggregation, sliding windows. In this example, I'm using a user-defined function to do the prediction based on the TensorFlow model. So as soon as I click return, the data is processed in real time from the Kafka topic here, you see? And therefore, the result here is the ID, the 5 nines, and the value which is returned from my analytic model. In this case, it's a value. So what that value means, that's what typically your business people and data scientists can tell you, or they plan what that means. And so here now I have a sensor generator which generates random data every second or so. And based on this random data, you get results back. And in this example, it could be if you do anomaly detection, in this case with an autoencoder, your business case could be you monitor every car for the last 60 minutes, and if, let's say, 10 times the value is over 5, then you send an alert to the driver, because this is how you detect anomalies here. This is now very much simplified. In the real world, it's, of course, much more complex from a business perspective. But you would implement it in the same way. And while here I just have one car which sends data, in the real world this can be tens of thousands or millions of cars sending data, and it's all processed in real time, including embedding analytic models here. And then, of course, if you take about millions of cars, you even have to improve your model more, that it's also very fast and so on. That's then a more enhanced and sophisticated discussion, which model is the best, which technology is the best. But here for this example, I think this is perfect. And you see, you can't measure it here. It's a few milliseconds how long it takes. And with that, that's in the end the demo. So I hope you got a little bit of feeling about how that looks like also and how you could implement that. I have plenty of different projects on GitHub, not just for model deployment, but also, as you see here, for example, I have an example where I really use Python and Jupyter to do the model training together with TensorFlow and Keras. So that might be interesting from a data scientist perspective, because they typically think completely different to this than a Java developer on the operations side. And therefore, if you want, just check this out. And maybe as last slide, and then I'm done, is really the point, what we see in the real world is typically really hybrid. In any big company, it's things which you have on-premise and things which you have in the cloud, and it really often also multi-cloud. And typically, this has to be connected somehow. In this case of model training and model deployment, it's pretty easy to do, and we see many use cases around that. And the same is for IoT and edge use cases. So the question with the car infrastructure comes up, do you really directly want to send all the data to the cloud? Or maybe you have some local data centers in each region, and there you collect the data, and then you have one aggregation Kafka cluster in the cloud. So this really depends a little bit on the architecture and the use case and the size of your project. We have seen anything of that. And with that, I'm done, and I hope I gave you a good overview. And now we are coming to questions. And Sönke here is running around with the microphone, because otherwise I don't hear you.
I think we have one somewhere back here.
If you can go to the slide of the architecture where you have the machine learning model back to Kafka cluster.
Which one was it?
Still before.
But the one in the beginning, or?
Yeah, I think one of the first five or six. Yeah, this one. Can you just elaborate what does it mean when the output of the machine learning coming back to Kafka here? So that training model just go back again here with the building model? So what does it mean here? I didn't get it.
So in the end, you mean when the model is deployed on the left bottom side?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So in the end, as I said, when your model is trained, it's a binary and you deploy it in an application. And then in the end, it's like a method. You get a parameter which you set, or more parameters which you set into the model. That's, for example, in the car example, the sensor information. Often it's many different ones. And then the model does its calculation and returns something. And what it returns is the prediction. In this live demo here, it was the anomaly. And this is in the end returned. And when it's returned, you can directly use it in this one single app, or you can send it back to another Kafka topic so that anyone else can consume it. So in the example from the cars, it would be that I deploy the anomaly detection in one Kafka Streams application or KSQL application, and the result of the prediction is not used there. It's sent back to another Kafka topic because from there any consumer can consume it. Like in our example, the real-time emergency application and also the batch analytics system. That's how this works. So a model under the hood is just an operation which gets data in and returns data out.
Okay. One quick one. Just elaborate on the last thing you said at the end of the presentation. You said the trade-off between processing data in the car and processing data in the cloud because, for example, in Germany, like the requirement of GDPR and how much data you want to transfer and so on. Can you elaborate a bit on this?
Yeah, that's really where the data is processed. That really depends on the specific projects, and it's even more. So especially in IoT scenarios, we see many, I'm based in Germany, we see many use cases where there is, for example, the car, and then there's something what is called the edge, but the edge really is also its own data center, like where's a Kubernetes running. And so often they send the data there to process it there, and then they filter it, and some of the data is then also replicated to the cloud for further analytics. Typically, it's either you replicate most of the data but anonymize something, or you process it only on-premise and only send the not-so-important information to the cloud. We see many customers, the big ones like the automotive companies, they spin up Kafka clusters everywhere in the world. And for example, in China, they run on Alibaba, and there it's a very different legal situation than in Germany and then in the US, where you can do most of the things. And therefore, they have to agree what can you do where. And what they would like to do is analyze everything together, of course, but they are not allowed to. But at least for the things which they are allowed to share, they really build one big aggregation cluster somewhere and send it from all the different regions there to process it there.
Nice. Any more questions?
Sorry?
The ML lab, that is like the production ML lab, that means the model scoring part, right? So you're saying that's
the model scoring, and that can be any app which consumes from Kafka. That can be a Java app, a Python app, that can be Kafka Streams, KSQL, yes. That's in the end a Kafka consumer where the model scoring is.
So when the Kafka Streams outputs the data, so how will it can invoke another model, right? So how would that model get the app data?
Yes, in the end, I can also show you a little bit more source code here, because what I showed you was in the end the implementation, how to use it. But now, if we take a look at the source code of one of these examples, this is now a Kafka Streams example. So here you see how you implement that. This is one of these production apps. It's a Java application, and in this Java application, so you have a public class. And I only import two different libraries here. The one is the one of my KSQL user-defined function, and the second one is the one of my analytic model. So in this case, it's H2O. But for TensorFlow, I would import some TensorFlow packages. And so here you see now the input. This is in the end what goes into the Kafka application. This is the sensor input. And here then you can process it. And in this case, what I'm doing here, I'm using the data from this string here, and I'm somehow converting it so that it has the right structure which your model expects it, and then I use it to do my prediction here. So this autoencoder model prediction, that's in the end my model, and the binary of the model behind it was loaded into app in memory, and here it's happening the prediction on the sensor data, and then I get my prediction as result here, and this prediction then is returned, and return in this case means it goes back to a Kafka topic, and from there everybody can consume it. So it's pretty easy and really straightforward to implement that. There is one more. Okay.
One more word.
My question is about performance. I know in machine learning there's good amount of that is spent in analyzing the data.
Mm-hmm.
But in your experience, having the data or the model sitting in a cloud, how does it impact with the serialization and the network delays and so forth?
Yeah.
How much of degradation do you see in general?
So you mean when you deploy the models into a Kafka app, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in the end, it doesn't really change much. The point is really there is models which are relatively slow, and there is models which are very fast. So in the best case, in something like this, so here I use H2O, which is an open source framework. The great thing about that is that this really generates Java code. And with this Java code, it really compiles to Java bytecode. And therefore, the model takes really more or less microseconds. So it's not even milliseconds depending on the model. So it's very, very fast in real time. If you have, for example, a deep learning model, then it can be much slower or so. That depends really on the model. But for the network or so, it doesn't really change much. So because in most use cases, that's the point I showed here also. So when you think about this, when you have use cases which you have anyway and want to improve them with machine learning, and before using machine learning, you have some business rules to implement it, and then afterwards you use the model for that. And the overall process with data processing and so on doesn't change that much. So in the experience I have seen from our projects, performance is typically not the bottleneck in these kind of projects in most cases. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.